Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you from 9 to noon on this Saturday, the first Saturday of the NHL playoff season. Thrilled to be joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus, and producer Tim. Richard, Ezra, good morning. Good to see both of you.
Morning, Drew.
Morning, Drew. I'm surprised that I made it into the studio. Richie's going all John Tortorella on me. He's upset with me.
Well, we'll deal with that throughout the show, I'm sure. And we'll, of course, anytime John Tortorella and Larry Brooks go after one another, it's really a must-see TV. And when we break down the Rangers Capitals series, the first two games of that series, we will certainly hear from the exchange between Mr. Tortorella and Mr. Larry Brooks of the New York Post. They've gone back and forth a number of times over the years, and after game one, yet again, it was another classic, and it's nothing if not entertaining.
Well, Richie, after last night's game, if I was Tortorella, I would have been mad regardless of what a reporter asked me, because they didn't necessarily play poorly, but when you get shut out and you're down a game, they're in trouble.
Well, they are in trouble, but that, unfortunately, you know what, you'd be right if their exchange was after game two, but unfortunately it was after game one, a game that they played actually pretty decent in, and had it took them to overtime, so they had a good chance to win that one.
That exchange wasn't last night?
No, it was
I didn't know that. I thought it was after last night's game.
No, that's why I'm here. I'm here to inform you, educate you. We're all here to inform our listening audience, educate our listening audience, and to do so, we called in some help from three of the finest hockey minds in the world today, joining us on the program later on this morning.
I thought you meant us, Drew.
Yeah, so did I, Drew.
No, you guys, adequate hockey minds. But joining us on the program this morning at 10 a.m. will be Bob Duff from the Windsor Star. Bob covers the Detroit Red Wings, you know, Windsor, Detroit being right across the water from one another. So we're pleased to welcome back to the program Bob Duff. At 11 o'clock, Aaron Ward of TSN is going to join us. Aaron, really establishing himself as one of TSN's top analysts, and he's, of course, not that far removed from a playing career, so you can get some real special insight from Aaron in terms of what's going on the ice in the playoff season, what's going through the mindset of the players. And the final guest this morning from the Buffalo News, joining us at 11:30, Mike Harrington is going to join us, one of our all-time guests. This is going to be his sixth or seventh appearance on the program. It's hard to, we had him on a few weeks ago, and he said he did such a good job, we had to have him on right again.
Drew, who was the player picked after Aaron Ward in the 91 draft by the Jets? Picked after the Jets pick. Aaron Ward was picked by the Jets, fifth overall,
yeah.
In 91. Who was the player picked sixth by the Flyers?
By the Flyers?
Yeah.
Peter Forsberg.
That's right.
Yeah. There you go.
How the fortunes of this organization and this city could have changed had that... No offense to Aaron, of course.
No, but I think Aaron himself might admit that the...
We won't ask him that, but yes.
Yeah, Okay, who was Aaron Ward, who was Aaron Ward traded to Detroit for?
I was just going to say...
Was it Paul Eisenbart?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Who was Paul Eisenbart traded for?
Dean Kennedy?
No, it was... Drew, that's a tough one early in the morning. Cheveldae.
No.
Straight back for Cheveldae?
No.
Or came with Cheveldae?
I think he was.
No, Aaron Ward was with Paul Eisenbart
right,
on his own.
And then Eisenbart not back to, what was it?
Wasn't that part of the Bob Essens trade? Or no, that was Sergei Bouton and Bob Essens at Detroit
for
Cheveldae. Yeah.
And somebody else.
What was it, Drew?
I believe it was Craig Janney, wasn't it?
No, it was Janney's for Turcotte. At the 96
Turcotte?
Deadline, yeah. Darren Turcotte for Craig Janney.
Janney and Tkachuk made quite a deadly duo.
Janney was a good passer, great passer, but he was a soft. Oh, my God. He wouldn't go in the corner if you paid him however much they were paying him. Anyhow.
Anyways, there you go.
Let's get going, Drew.
Exactly. We'll be 10 years from now when we're still on this program, we'll be able to go look back and talk about the comeback of the NHL, right? And the trade deadlines and everything.
Sure hope so.
We'll get through that throughout the course of the show.
By the way, Drew, I hope you're not too upset that I've decided to go with Richie for my season tickets.
No, I don't want to spend any more time with you if I don't have to.
Fair enough.
It's perfectly fine. Let's look back at last night in the NHL, and of course a busy night in there, or busy really starts at 12 noon. 12 noon Winnipeg time is the Detroit Phoenix game today. So let's review and preview last night in Pittsburgh. Just a dominating performance after a lackluster game won by the Tampa Bay Lightning. They came back, house on fire last night, defeating the Penguins 5-1. In Pittsburgh, just a dominating performance by the Tampa Bay Lightning.
They made a couple adjustments. Drew, the first one being lines. They changed their lines. You saw a number of combinations throughout the game, but one that you saw a fair amount was St. Louis, LeCavalier, and Malone played a bit together. Obviously, you see Stamkos booked off of that line, and that's one thing. I mean, that's another thing is that they kind of dropped in the neutral zone. They kind of dropped to four guys sometimes. You know, they do a 1-3-1, but they kind of clog the neutral zone a little bit more. I think partially because the Penguins lack necessary skill in guys to put the puck in and carry the puck over the neutral zone. So they tried to pressure them. And they did that quite well, and they got the lead. And getting the lead is a big thing for your confidence, a big thing for style.
Yeah.
It does wonders for you. And the Penguins, I think not only does it do wonders for the Lightning, but for the Penguins, when you get down a goal, and you don't have much scoring.
It hurts. It's tough.
It's tough.
They really swarmed them in the first period. I mean, Tampa Bay had a 3-0 lead after the first period.
That was it. I mean, yeah. Pittsburgh's not going to score. If Pittsburgh's winning this series, and that's why after the first game you say, it's not a surprise, and I picked Tampa to win the series in six, but it's not a surprise if Pittsburgh won a game 2-0. Because if they're going to win a game, it's going to be 2-0 or 3-1 or 2-1. I don't see Pittsburgh scoring over three goals in a game and winning.
Richie, I didn't think that in the first game, in the first few periods, Rolson was playing very well. And I thought Pittsburgh deserved to win the game, even though Tim's raising my levels there. All of a sudden, my voice is echoing. But maybe just to me in my own mind, once again, things wow. happen in my mind that nobody else
You want to get back to the hockey analysis as opposed to your brain?
But you know what? Richie's exactly
Freud
right.
Freud in here right now?
Richie's exactly right. You know, if Pittsburgh's got Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, it's a different team. And now they're led by Jordan Staal and a group of scorers, even with a guy like James Neal. But James Neal, he had, what, one or two goals in 20 games with Pittsburgh? You know, these guys aren't
James
bona fide snipers, you know?
He's an up-and-down, a north-south player.
Right.
Good shot, pretty aggressive. Probably hasn't been as aggressive as he was before the concussion last year in Dallas, but still fairly aggressive. He needs to play with a passer. He played with Brad Richards. He needs to play with a guy like Sidney Crosby. I mean, who doesn't? But you know what I mean? And he's an up-and-down guy. He puts a puck on and has a good shot. He's not going to be obviously he made the pass to Kovalev in game one, so he can create some, but that's not his game. And so right now, that was a trade for the future, and they're counting him to kind of play a different role than maybe he would play if they had Malkin and Crosby there, because then he'd be the go-to guy in terms of goals as opposed to maybe a guy trying to create goals for himself. James Neal, off the rush, he can create a little bit for himself, but when I say north-south, he's not going to be like a Jimmy Benn kind of guy, the guy who basically replaced him in Dallas. He doesn't have the skill of a Jimmy Benn.
And Richie, you know, when we were analyzing this series, less than a week ago, we were talking about how skilled Pittsburgh's defense is, specifically Chris Letang and Zdeněk Mihalik, and we saw how skilled they were in the first game. And in the second game, we kind of saw how when Tampa's offense is going, I mean, it's tough. It's tough when the Stamkoses and LeCavaliers and St. Louis
power plays too. I think there's three power play goals last night.
Yeah, let me check on that. But
there's three power play goals last night. So I mean, that's a factor too. LeCavalier was going yesterday, and to us, he was the key to the series.
Two power play, one shorthanded.
There you go. So two power play, one shorthanded.
But
I believe 1-4-4. Brewers goals 4-4, I believe. I mean, they weren't necessarily a 5-on-5, which Pittsburgh wants to play. You want to clog the zone.
That's right. Tampa Bay had too much room to skate, and that was a big difference. Moving on to Washington last night, the Capitals take a stranglehold on that series with a 2-0 win over the Rangers. Washington just playing their good, solid defensive style of hockey.
I don't know what you guys thought. I thought that was an extremely boring game.
Yeah, so the first game I thought was the same as, I mean, Washington had the puck a little bit more in the first game than in the second. But yeah, it's a boring game. Washington gets the lead, and they handle the puck. They
40 shots total in the entire game. Rangers had 22, the Caps had 18. So
we talked about the key.
Shots.
We talked about the key to the series before we started. To me, it was the Washington secondary scoring against the Rangers' back four, bottom four D.
Well, Jason Chimera and Jason Arnott.
Arnott was power play.
Yeah.
Chimera was an even strength goal against McCabe and Gilroy.
Yeah.
certainly not a very good combination defensively, McCabe and Gilroy, and that's exactly what happened. And even Strinko, the Washington's second and third lines, scoring against the Rangers, bottom 2D, Stahl. You know, people will get on Mark Stahl for the turnover in game one in overtime.
Right.
Let me tell you, as a guy who's coached before and just played and watched, Mark Stahl's wingers and centers bolted the zone in game one.
They left way too early.
There was a triangle of guys at him.
Yeah.
The winger left the zone. He had nowhere to go. He kind of, the puck kind of tipped off of his stick, but it wasn't his fault. And then, you know, the quick transition to Semin, who's got as good of a shot in the NHL as you get, is the, you know, and then they lost. But for the most part, guys, Stahl, Girardi have been shutting down the Ovechkin backstrom line.
I was just going to say, if those guys can play like they have in the first two games and they win both games, because Ovechkin might have a couple points and Semin obviously got the overtime winner, Richie.
Yep.
But those guys haven't been anything spectacular. I mean, Ovechkin, I thought, was pretty good yesterday, last night. But they haven't been anything special. As far as I'm concerned, you're right. Washington's depth on forward, and they're actually showing their depth on defense as well.
I know we're in a rush here, Drew, but one thing. Watching the game last night, there's a big difference. I know Ovechkin's a shooter more than a passer, and he's not, you know, I never thought he was Crosby in terms of, you know, the best player in the world. There's a play yesterday where Ovechkin, as a scorer and as a shooter primarily, he misses opportunities to make passes. There was a play in a 3-on-2 that Ovechkin had to rush it and do what he wanted to, and then Backstrom was wide open for a drop pass for a one-timer. He doesn't necessarily see the ice as Crosby does, and sometimes his shoot-first attitude costs them scoring chances, especially now that teams have adjusted to his style of play.
In Vancouver last night, a game you heard live here on Sports Radio 1290. By the way, great to hear NHL hockey back in the city, and we're thrilled to be able to bring that to our audience here on Sports Radio 1290. The Canucks defeated the Blackhawks 4-3 last night.
A lot closer than the first game, Drew.
Yeah, a lot closer than the first game. Vancouver had to win both games at home, and they did. Yeah. I mean, that boost of confidence is going to be great. But for them, in terms of the series, because I mean, everybody expects them to be fragile, but I don't think they will be.
They won the game. Yeah. They're taking care of business right now. Chicago doesn't look very impressive, guys.
No, Chicago looks tired.
Chicago looks tired, and we said it before. This is not a surprise to us. We know what he here picked Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Taves has not played well in the first two games. The puck seems to be popping off the stick for whatever reason. In terms of the best Hawks forward, I mean, Hossa's played, I thought, fairly well. Ben Smith actually played very well yesterday. Nobody knows who Ben Smith is, but he played extremely well. He had two goals. The goals notwithstanding, he was possessing the puck along the boards. He was really controlling, you know, playing a controlled game for such a youngster. And Brian Campbell's done an amazing job rushing the puck. But the Hawks don't have enough guys. It's a pretty simple game, guys. The Hawks don't have enough guys who can create offense for them. They put yesterday Kane, Taves, and Sharp together for a fair amount of time. And then they have Hossa going out. After those
four, that line is shut down, who are you going to?
And I know Smith scored a couple yesterday. Sure he did. Yep. But the sustained pressure has been lacking. And I just don't see them being able to sustain pressure against a very deep Vancouver defense.
And, of course, we'll break down the series in more detail as we go throughout the show. We're going to go series by series and really go deep into the first couple games that have been played. The last game last night, Anaheim evened up their series against Nashville. 5-3 win Anaheim over Nashville. Bobby Ryan could be facing some disciplinary action by the NHL for stomping on a player from Nashville. We'll see if it was, you know, it's not... Stomping might not be the right word. The puck was there, but he did step on the guy. So we'll see if that turns into anything. Because, I mean, I don't need to tell our fans, but Anaheim can't afford to lose Bobby Ryan for any period of time.
Boys, as far as that, I guess we'll get to that a little bit later as far as the suspension goes. But as far as the game actually went, that was like night and day. That was the dominant Anaheim offensive team that I think I expected to see. I think maybe you guys expected to see. A lot of people expected to see. And I mean, it was a completely different game. Nashville wasn't able to kind of control the game defensively like they did, but that series, I think, is going long. It's going to go long.
I thought as of yesterday there was two goals. The first two goals were on the power play, one on a 5-on-3 after a timeout by Carlisle, and then one on a 5-on-4. And then the third goal scored by Bobby Ryan was a matchup problem. And then you talk about matchups in the National Hockey League, and that was the Bobby Ryan pairing gets left line up against a combination that wasn't Weber and Suter. They took advantage quite quickly.
Yeah, and there you go. Looking ahead to tonight today in the NHL, it's a quadruple header of hockey action. So if you're a hockey fan, you're in heaven. Starting at noon Central, Phoenix at Detroit for game two of that series.
By the way, can we put that into context? That game is on at 10 in the morning because there's no daylight savings this year in Phoenix.
That's right.
Game is on at 10 in the morning in Phoenix. Well, they really care about the television market in Phoenix when they're negotiating the big contract. correct.
Yeah.
I love when I hear that. Can you back it up with some kind of information? Can you tell me how they actually care about the market if they're putting a game on at 10 in the morning on a Saturday?
They're not caring about the market. I know. It's bunk. At 4
o'clock. Time is running out.
At 4 o'clock Central, Buffalo at Philadelphia.
Time is running out.
At 6 o'clock Central, Montreal at Boston.
The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking.
At 9 o'clock tonight, Los Angeles at San Jose.
The hourglass is almost empty.
The hourglass is almost empty.
I think you guys are giving me my cue that we're up against it and we need to go to break. Is that it?
The clock is ticking, Drew.
Thank you. The clock is ticking. Let's get out. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to start going series by series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever. Washington Capitals versus the New York Rangers.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to spend this segment discussing the Rangers versus Capitals. And, of course, follow us along on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
And go to IllegalCurve.com, our website, because we pay for it.
This wasn't a cooperative effort. I was getting there.
We're co-op.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we're a co-op or not. Anyways.
Do you get your gas at co-op?
I do. But that's really not important right now.
Richie's still mad at me, by the way.
That's good. That's really not important right now. Anyways, John Tortorella, Larry Brooks, round five.
This is a series. Yes.
Are your backs against the wall? No.
I never think our backs are against the wall. I think a series.
You mean in the playoffs or just anytime?
Anytime.
So you didn't hit your backs against the wall Saturday? Against New Jersey.
Backs against the wall. You mean the regular season?
Well, no, that's what I meant. You said, I never think our backs are against the wall. Are you just talking about playoffs or anytime?
Well, we're in playoffs right now. You're trying to. You ask me questions to try to box me into language.
No,
yes, you do.
I'm asking you, do you think your backs are against the wall? You said, I never think our backs are against the wall. I said, regular season or playoffs. So you're only talking about the playoffs.
I'm talking about a series of playoffs. Why are we even going back to the regular season? Because it's logistics with you. You try to use my words, Brooksy.
About the regular season just now.
No, you try to use my words and box me into a corner all the time.
Question. I'm trying to get an answer. That's it.
Can I have another question? I went in here in a pretty good mood today, too. So
did I.
Yeah. Well, I'll be that up, didn't you?
No, I think you did.
Can I have the next question, please?
Larry Brooks, John Tortorella. That was after game one.
Yeah.
Now after game two, I think it's fairly safe to say that the New York Rangers' backs are up against the wall. What have you seen in this first part of the series so far?
I've seen an invisible Marian Gabrick, Drew. I've seen a guy who's played 26 minutes in about 24 minutes and hasn't done anything. And he's got 8 shots on net in 2 games. He has no goals, no assists. He's not creating enough. I realize he doesn't play with the most talented players, but he's got to bring his game up. He's getting paid about $8 million a year. Game breakers come to play in the playoffs, and right now he's not there.
Richie, we were talking about, obviously we were going back to the mid-90s when the last season of the Jets, and you mentioned Craig Janney not being very physical. To me, Marian Gabrick is another one of those guys. He's got no physical aspect to his game, and the reason why, just hear me out, because I think you would agree that Gabrick's speed is amazing, right? He's won the fastest skater competition at the All-Star Game. No, that doesn't mean anything, but
he's a fast guy. He's very fast.
Very talented.
Especially with the puck. He's very fast with the puck.
Very fast with the puck. He's the type of guy that loves to bolt down the line, quickly stop and shoot, not unlike an Ovechkin, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
It's fair.
Gabrick is the type of guy, though, that has absolutely no drive. He has no ability to play along the boards like a Richards or a guy like a Scott Hartnell on Philly, where a guy will drive. Gabrick is very soft, in my opinion.
He is, and he doesn't create for others.
I couldn't agree with you more. He has the ability to be a game breaker, but on this Rangers team, let's be honest, he had a horrible regular season, and it's just continuing into the playoffs. He's the most talented guy aside from Prosper. Not in any order, but Dubinsky, Prosper, Fedotenko, they don't have a lot of scoring without Callahan there. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't agree with you more, and I think it's Gabrick has never, he's, you know, how old is he now? He's 28 years old. He's been in the league for a while now. He's never toughened up his game. His game is not built for the playoffs.
I think it's a couple of interesting things about this, and I want to switch over, and I agree with you, as you know, especially Gabrick's not creating for others. You know, he flies on that right wing, but unless he has the puck, I mean, he just doesn't seem to create opportunities for other people. A lot of the stuff is off the rush, as you mentioned. You look at the Capitals, and as opposed to past seasons, Drew, look at the balanced ice time you see on this team. There's more depth. Alexander Ovechkin yesterday played under 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing for them.
And they're saving him, yes.
Not saving him, Drew. It's a couple of reasons. You don't in the playoffs, you don't save a guy. You know, I understand you're saying not playing 25 minutes because later on you don't want to wear him down. But you also want to win the games you're in because you can't plan for the future if you can't get there. They're playing a balanced out. Backstrom playing under 20 minutes. Ovechkin playing under 20 minutes. The ice time is controlled. The defenseman. Every defenseman on the team is essentially playing, you know, 17, 18 to 20 minutes. Ice time on the team is Alzner and Hannon, 21 each. It's not a lot for defensemen, guys. Look on the other side. Mark Stahl last night, who is by far and away the best defenseman in this series, mm-hmm. plays almost 24 minutes. So you understand Washington's more of a balanced attack. Now, in terms of the Rangers, the power play goal hurt them, but it's even strength, and the even strength matchup hurt them. They had McCabe and Gilroy on. They got burnt. McCabe didn't make a great read there. They got burnt on that goal. You know, the other forwards on the ice at the time were Dubinsky, Stepan. Interesting that they have two centers on the ice at the same time. And then Fedotenko. I mean, that's what it is. That's a matchup right there. This is what it is, Drew. You have Marcus Johansson, who's looked very good, by the way. It was one matchup. I mean, you talk about the series as a whole. But that even strength goal gave them, that was the first goal, and became the difference. It was the winner. It was Marcus Johansson, Chimera. And like, it's a good line. I like that line. It can be physical. Chimera's fast. Johansson's creative. They beat the guys in a 5-on-5 matchup. Rangers couldn't score on the power play. That's about it.
Richie, I have two things to add.
Only two power plays
to what you said, because what you're saying is bang on. As far as ice time goes, and just back to Ovechkin, I think when you're talking about that, I'm thinking Bruce Boudreau has found a way to effectively use his ice time. I mean, Drew mentioned, you know, he's saving him, but I think Boudreau has found that perfect amount of time that Ovechkin should be on the ice. He's not on the ice for too much because he's not effective if he's on the ice for too much.
Look, in the playoffs,
long shifts too.
In the playoffs, you expect that you're going to have to ride your horses mostly each and every series. If Washington can get through a series, the first round with their best players only playing 20 minutes a game, that is going to be invaluable. In terms of keeping them fresh later on in the playoffs. And, you know, Ovechkin has not been playing big ice time all season. He's been, quote-unquote, saving himself.
Yep.
If they can save him for another series, when it comes to, you know, when they have to play seven-game series in the conference finals or the Stanley Cup or whatever, having a fresher Alex Ovechkin is going to be a huge advantage.
Against a team such as Buffalo.
Against any sort of team where they've had to ride their players 25, 26 minutes
yep.
through the first round. Those minutes take a huge toll on you, and if you get that extra, you know, that extra ability to stay fresh and keep your legs, you know, feeling good, it's a huge advantage.
Here, Richie touched on another guy who I've been very impressed with. I've always been a big Brooks Lake fan. He's a Saskatchewan mm-hmm. boy. Mm-hmm. I think he's been one of the, I wouldn't say a revelation, but I think he's been one of the guys that I've been very impressed with on Washington. And another guy that Richie touched on, by the way, Richie's like my reference, so whenever I go reference that, it's in our season preview show. Carl Alzner has looked very good, very good. Defensively. He's a guy that it took him a while to crack that lineup.
Very good.
He's looking great.
Yeah. Down 2-0.
Drew, can I talk about the ice time last year?
Yeah.
The ice time last year for Ovechkin in the playoffs was 23.5, 25.5, 24, 25 minutes, 21 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes again, and then 27 minutes.
But seven games.
Seven games, but I'm talking about that's per game.
Yeah, that's an average of, you know, 24 minutes a game.
Somebody will say, oh, he played 26 minutes on game one. I went to overtime.
Right. Well, exactly. Yeah. So there's extra time, and when you're in overtime, you're riding your stars.
Right. But I mean that is something that has to be taken into account. He's playing a little bit of less time. They're spreading it out more, and that means a couple of things, Drew. That means they're not riding their horses as much. They feel more confident in their other lines, both defensively and offensively.
Yeah.
I think Jason Arnott's addition not only adds,
huge,
you know, in terms of on ice, but off ice, he's, you know, Pierre Maguire had a really good point. Arnott played the first game. And you talk all about, oh, the Capitals' defensive style this year. Well, Arnott got there at the trade deadline and looked over, and this is the way we play defense. So I'm not so sure how defensive. I mean, they might have changed the style of play, but it's still, it wasn't airtight. I'm not saying it's airtight now, but it's better. And this is it. This is the Capitals drew well here with no Callahan, but they've taken care of business. They have limited the Rangers' opportunities, and the Rangers aren't that good offensively. And what happens is Staal and Girardi have been terrific. So you have to give them credit where credit's due. Lundqvist has been very good. It's been fine. Their issues are scoring right now if you're the Rangers. And how do you create scoring?
Down 2-0. Their series shifts to New York tomorrow afternoon. Do the Rangers have, I mean, do you expect to see them come back to make this a competitive series?
I see them winning game 3.
Yes, see them winning game 3?
Yeah.
Do you see them going, is it going to go more than 5?
Well, I predicted it before the playoffs, Washington 6. You trying to make me change my pick already?
No, I'm not trying to make you change anything.
On Monday.
I'm just saying, have you seen anything that makes you think it's going to go?
Not really.
What have you seen that makes you think it's going to go 6?
Well, I mean, the Rangers still keep it tight. Staal and Girardi have played tremendous hockey. If the Rangers can get a couple goals here, then there's no reason why he can't go 6.
Hey, Richie, Sean Avery was really a factor in last night's game.
Well, you know, they obviously benched him for game 1. He didn't do much in game 2, has he? One thing's clear. Tortorella doesn't like Avery.
No, but that's not
doesn't
a surprise.
Like yeah, doesn't like
boys,
him.
I think, depending on, I know this is, you know, a big if, but I think if the Rangers play win game 3, but win it commandingly,
yeah,
then my opinion might change, but The way it's going now, I think, yeah, it could be Capitals and even 4 or 5.
So you're
I'm not switching my pick, Drew, but I just think my pick was obviously wrong because
I mean,
the Capitals have played the Capitals. Like, if you wanted to rank how the Capitals have played in the first two games, I'd give them 8.59 out of 10. They've played very well.
But the thing is, as if you watch the first game, the Washington had the puck for a lot of that time. Even if it was 33-25 in shots, the puck possession was, in my opinion, more favorable to Washington than the second game, though. So you look at the shots, the Rangers outshot them 22-18. Now they were trailing, so you think they'd outshoot them. But they outshot them 13-7 in the first period, and it was 0-0 after the first.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Detroit-Phoenix series ahead of our interview with Bob Duff of the Windsor Star.
The clock is ticking, Drew.
Time is running out.
Yeah, very funny. You guys are listening, and everybody else is listening, to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Detroit Red Wings versus the Phoenix Coyotes.
You heard the nice voiceover, man. It's time to talk about the Detroit Red Wings and the Phoenix Coyotes.
Drew, is it true that there's breaking news about the Phoenix Coyotes?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what's happening? Is time running out, perhaps?
Heard that.
Time is running out.
Time is running out. You know, we haven't heard that before.
There's a new story on TSN last night during the intermission, and basically what they told us was,
time is running out.
We haven't given up.
I love the line quickly. I have to make light of this because I love the line yesterday during the intermission that that Dreger says that the NHL has other options to explore in Phoenix.
We're not yet done.
Other options to explore in Phoenix before they would move here.
Yeah.
Like, there's another option here. After 2 years, there's another option sitting in the closet that they're going to explore before they move the team here.
Hey, Richie,
we're getting close to the end.
Isn't the other option that we can make the announcement already? Like, that's the option. Well, you can even pretend like,
I love the,
give up the facade here.
This is a joke. And then he literally said,
I don't know.
Time is running out.
Yeah. It's what everybody's saying.
And then the classic, the clock is ticking.
The clock.
Time is running out.
The clock is ticking. Winnipeg, don't get too excited, but time is running out. Like, that's actually what's been said.
For 4 months,
the same thing. Nothing's changed. There's no reports. Time is running out. It's like, yeah, I know. The calendar changes every day. I know time is running out.
The sky is blue.
The sky is blue.
The water is liquid.
Stephen Brenton had put it best in the Globe and Mail yesterday. The time is running out because nobody wants to buy this darn team with their own money.
Good job saying darn there, because yes. I could see what else was coming out of your mouth and you held it in.
With their own money. That's why time is running out. You don't need to have a source to tell you that. You need common sense.
It's coming back to Winnipeg!
It is coming. Let's talk about the on-ice product.
Well, let me tell you something right now.
Okay.
And we're going to ask Bob Duff about this from the Windsor Star, covers the Red Wings. Great writer for years and years and years. This is absolutely 100% a distraction for the Phoenix Coyotes. 100%.
It can't not be.
And we're going to ask him about this as well. And it's going to be two more home games in Phoenix.
Yeah. Two more home games for the Red Wings, you mean?
Is it going to be a whiteout or a redout?
Well, Dan Bickley, the Arizona
Republic. That was such a garbage.
Asking Red Wings fans to wear white to make it a whiteout.
That was actually, I felt bad reading that article.
At least the Suns are going to be good next year.
The Phoenix Suns? I don't think so.
At least the Cardinals have a quarterback.
No, they don't.
At least the Diamondbacks are going to be good next year.
No, I don't think so. It's slim pickings in Phoenix sports wise.
Drew, the real estate market in Phoenix is good.
No, it's crashing.
No, that's a low blow.
Yeah. That article by Dan Bickley in the Arizona.
There's a new condo development in Glendale that can seat about 16,000 condos.
It's called Jobbing.com Arena.
Yeah.
That article was embarrassing. Apparently, he wrote the same article last year.
Dave Manuk linked it on IllegalCurve.com.
That's
same
right.
Article last year.
We have Dan on the line? I think we have Dan on the line. Dan,
no,
you there?
No, we don't have Dan on the line. Drama in the Desert. Check it out on...
We have Dan on the segment, but time's running out.
Drama in the Desert. Check it out on IllegalCurve.com.
Who writes that segment, Drew?
Dave Manuk. It was an embarrassing...
That's right.
It was an embarrassing article. Can you imagine writing an article pleading to other teams' fans to wear your home colors so that it looks good?
That you copied from us in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. You mean stealing the whiteouts?
Yeah.
Which we stole from Vancouver, but that's not that important at the time anyways.
Was the Rack behind that?
Rack may have been there, I think, in Vancouver when that happened.
Rack was behind that.
Rack started the whiteout.
We need to get Rack on and talk about that.
Yeah. We'll get to Rack later on, I'm sure. Let's talk about the on-ice performance. Really, game one, Phoenix won that first period in a dominating fashion.
I wouldn't go that far.
What about the second and third period?
Well, Detroit came back. I mean, Jimmy Howard kept Phoenix in that game one.
If Jimmy Howard can play really solid goaltending, can play really solid net, there's no chance they lose.
Well, Richie, Jimmy likes the playoffs. Jimmy isn't scared of Ilya Brizgalov. But Jimmy can get the job done.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Seinfeld reference for all of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Out there.
Jimmy's going to get you, Kramer. It was really, I mean, I watched, that first period, I was sitting there, and this is after Phoenix had the 1-0 lead.
Hold on, Drew, was this before or after you were on CBC Radio? Sorry,
CBC TV. That was after I was on CBC TV. But that first period, Detroit looked, they were running around, they looked slow. Phoenix had a jump to their step, they had an edge, and the only reason it wasn't 3-0 after the first period was because of Jimmy Howard. Pavel Datsyuk took over. And he took over in a manner in which only Pavel Datsyuk can.
And you know what? Remus is going to get on me right now. But when you don't have Zdeněk Mihajlík on there to match up against Datsyuk, we're going to ask Bob Duff about this.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Who's
your shutdown pairing in Phoenix?
Well, they don't have their best defensive defenseman is Ed Jovanovski.
I don't know about that, Drew.
Well, who is it?
Keith Yandel?
Well, I mean...
Not Yandel either. I mean, the best defensive defenseman might be Michael Roosevelt.
A guy who was...
Derek Morris could argue he's not great defensively. He was injured, didn't play
That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about in the first game. I mean, Michael Roosevelt, a guy who was chased out of New York with pitchforks and flaming torches.
But it wasn't so much for his play as for his first contract.
Yeah. I know.
Wasn't that also the situation for you in the nation's capital?
you're giving it to me, eh?
A lot of nonsense this morning.
Drew did a great job there.
We don't have to analyze my breakdown of my activities in Ottawa.
Drew, wasn't a major what I noticed in that game is there was no Zetterberg.
They
played well.
I
know he's injured, but they played a good second and third period and without Zetterberg. I mean, this team is deep enough to get it done against the Phoenix team.
Against the Phoenix team, they are outmatched.
The Red Wings controlled
the shot clock. After the first periods, when they were leading, that means that they're controlling the play for the most part. Jimmy Howard played well. Detroit had 36 shots. Phoenix had 28. Again, Detroit, when you are able to play, Pavel Datsyuk was the key, as you said, Drew, and there's no doubt about that. The guy played 18 minutes. He had a goal, but he controlled the puck, and he had 8 shots on net. That's a lot of shots. 8 shots on net's a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And you talk about the shutdown pairing in Phoenix, the defense pairing that played the most. I mean, their defense pairing that played the most. The defenseman that played the most was Keith Yandel. Now, you have to realize something. 7.5 minutes of his 26 minutes was on the power play.
Because they can't play him in even strength situations.
He doesn't play shorthanded, which we know.
I'm not sure if he can skate backwards.
Drew, you're probably right in terms of what they're relying on defensively, and it's Adrian Aucoin and Klessler playing big minutes on the back end in terms of defensively.
Those guys are 100 years old.
Well, no, Klessler's not.
Klessler's not, but Aucoin is, and Jovanovski is.
Aucoin's very slow. Jovanovski's never been that strong defensively. He's always been kind of a wanderer, dating back to his days in Vancouver and before that in Florida. That's just been his game. He's not as fast as he once was. Detroit comes at you in a lot of ways, and Phoenix doesn't have the depth to do so. And if they're going to win, Brizgalov needs to be better than that, Drew, and that's the difference. He let in a weak goal. He needs to be better than that.
That first period, I mean, if I'm a Phoenix Coyote, they played the best period. They played the best first period they could have. And it's actually, they should be upset that they were only up 1-0 after that first period. And it seemed like they had an emotional letdown. That's how best I could see, because they dominated that first period.
One period, Drew.
I know it's one period, but they dominated, and Howard stood on his head to keep it at a 1-0 Phoenix lead. Then Datsyuk comes on the power play, comes from behind the net, just using his... everybody else looked like they were skating in quicksand, and he just came out from behind the net and made a 1-1, and then it was just, from there on, it was just Phoenix on their heels the entire game. The ice was tilted.
If you have six power plays...
Yeah.
You can only score... Two goals, period.
Yeah.
But six power plays in the even strength time. I mean, Drew, this is a problem for them.
Richie, and you mentioned Brizgalov having to be better. I agree 100%.
Yes,
and I think another thing is they don't have a game breaker. Phoenix doesn't have a guy that's going to...
We talked about it.
They don't have that game breaker.
You play against other teams in the league for a prolonged period of time, and for the regular season. You play against matchups, and you play a structured style. You have a veteran team. You don't make too many mistakes. You have a good goaltender. You're not playing against...
Detroit.
The Minnesota Wild right now. You're playing against Detroit for maximum of seven games.
You are playing against Detroit,
You can't. You don't control the puck. They control the puck. They have great defense to shut down your poor offense. I picked six games because I thought Howard would give one game up, and I thought Phoenix might win one game at home. But Detroit's just too good.
On that note, let's go to break. When we come back after these commercial messages, Bob Duff of the Windsor Star is going to join us to even break down the series even further. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. .45 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Way to go, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you.
Way to go.
Thank you. I unfortunately have poor reading comprehension, apparently. And Bob Duff is at 10 a.m., not 9:45.
That's a Duff right there.
For all, exactly. So for all you tuning in to hear Bob Duff, keep your hold your horses. 15 minutes from now, Bob Duff will be on.
Drew, we'll give you a mulligan, but when we're golfing this summer, you're not getting any mulligans. And you're paying for the beer.
But you could get some mulligatawny.
That's some good soup. That's some good soup. Okay, I appreciate that, Ezzy. Thank you for that. Thank you for that offer.
The Boston Bruins versus the Montreal Canadiens.
Hold on, just for the record, who picked the Habs out of the four of us?
I don't think anybody.
I did.
You did?
Did you really?
Let me go to the prediction board. I have it right here.
Well, you know,
it's only one game.
But don't ever.
He did. Everybody else had Boston in five. Ezzy had Montreal in six.
Well, it's interesting. You know, when you watch that game, you draw comparisons, and it's hard not to from last year.
Yeah.
The Habs play, if you know Jacques Martin's style, they play a collapse, meaning that all five guys essentially drop right to the slot, and then they leave the points open, and they just try and say, get it through. You know, try and get the puck through five guys, and get the puck through one of the best goalies in the NHL. My Vezina winner, as far as I'm concerned, is Carey Price. I think he's better, or as good as Tim Thomas. I think he's better than Tim Thomas, but Thomas is certainly not better than him, I'll put you that way, in my opinion. Now, in that first game, Boston controlled the puck.
Yep.
So in your collapsing style, you're giving up the puck a lot, and then it's a matter of, can you prevent the goals? And they blocked a lot of shots, and again, the way Carey Price looked terrific, he looked confident, he looked calm. He looked completely in control.
He did look in control. That was what I was saying.
But Boston had the puck the whole time. I mean, people talk about Boston not being physical enough, Boston not doing this. Maybe getting guys in front. Yeah, okay. But again, it's like Washington last year. It's hard to say you didn't do a lot right. You outshoot them.
Yeah.
You have the puck more.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to beat him on the scoreboard, obviously, but you do a lot of things right. So Claude Julien getting frustrated is probably getting frustrated at the media at the end of the game, I think Montreal media, is because, you know, he thought his team played fairly well, they just didn't get it done. Now, Montreal, you have to take advantage of your chances.
Which they did. I mean, they didn't have that many of them. I thought when Montreal did well...
Turnover by Cabrelle.
Yeah.
Goal.
Yeah.
Turnover by Lucic. Goal. That,
the Lucic turnover was terrible.
That's a, but you're trying to make, you're trying to get offense. Minutes left. So it's not like it's in the middle of the game.
I thought, from what I saw of the game, I thought the speed of Montreal's forwards going after the puck on the forecheck against Boston's sort of slower defensemen, I thought that was a big advantage for Boston.
We talked about that.
I know we talked about that. That was where I thought Montreal really impacted the game.
When Boston plays a team with actual loaded a forward, like, you know, a lot of like Washington.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you saw Desjardins, I thought Desjardins played, you know, not on the score sheet, because he's not gonna, you're not going to see his contributions on the score sheet very often. But I thought the speed, him flying down the wing to get after loose pucks that were dumped into the Boston zone, I thought his speed was a great neutralizer of the Boston defense there.
And you talk about this, the chess match, the matchups, Montreal versus Boston, and we would all agree that Boston's got the edge in certain areas. It's debatable defense, but another thing, in addition to Drew mentioned speed, and a guy like Gionta, who got two goals, looked very good. He's a speedy guy. He might not be as fast as he used to be, but he's a speedy guy, and they've got speedy guys like Camilleri. But to me, a huge thing was Roman Hamrlik looked very good. P.K. Subban looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Brent Sopel is a depth defenseman. Brent Sopel doesn't make...
I thought Sopel looked pretty...
He helps with those blocking shots.
Brent Sopel's not going to...
That's what he's good at, blocking shots.
Brent Sopel, Drew, is there for, you know, 10 to 12 minutes or whatever of ice time. I held
my breath every minute I saw him on the ice. I thought he looked really slow.
Well, they didn't let in any goals, so how bad could he have been?
I know, but I thought he looked unsure with the puck. I thought that
He's their sixth defenseman.
I'm aware of that. If they're going to play him, though, he didn't hurt them, but I thought that you'll see his minutes diminish, I think, throughout the series.
As long as he doesn't make any mistakes, he's doing his job.
But 14 minutes.
I thought I know what he is, and I know what he brings to the table, and I know what his limitations are. All I'm saying is that I thought that Boston's best opportunities, as you would expect when you're the fifth or sixth defenseman, came when he was on the ice, because I didn't think he could handle what Boston was throwing at him when they were rushing him.
Talk about P.K. Subban?
Please.
You talk about calm, you know, you talk about being able to pick up his game and play in control for the most part. Subban played in control.
Yes.
He's the best defenseman now.
Of course he is. You want to know how many minutes he played?
I'd love to know. Thank you.
Guess.
20.
24.
27 minutes.
Wow.
And you know what Jacques Martin...
He put the team on his back.
You know what Jacques Martin is doing?
That's Chris Pronger territory, Richie.
Exactly. You know what Jacques Martin is doing? The guy knows. We talked about the lack of depth in Montreal.
Yeah.
Okay, we're talking about, you look at their defense. This is the defense they dress. Spatrick back, huge.
Yeah.
Because we're not sure if he's going to be back. That's huge.
That's right. That's a big
huge
advantage. Yeah.
Spatrick is Spatrick and Wisniewski.
Yeah.
Hamrlik, Sopel, Subban, Gill. Now, when you have Spatrick back, first of all, if they have Georges and Markov, it's darn good defense. But when you know, really, the weakness there, I mean, Hamrlik's slow. Every guy there can do something. And when you have Spatrick in there, think about who you don't have to rely on. The other guys they have are not even close to Spatrick's ability. So, but my point was is that you're playing Subban 27 minutes a game because he's your best defenseman. Martin's saying, this is my best defenseman. I'm going to ride my best guys. I'm going to go down my best guys on the ice.
Which is what you should do. Why would you, what are you going to do, save him for a second second playoff series you're not going to get to?
I mean, think about
how Montreal's not expecting to go to the Cup Finals, even though, I know Tim would love it if that happened. But this team, I don't think, is expecting to go to the Cup Finals without the two big horses of Markov and Georges. I can't believe they are. But, I mean, if Price plays well and they keep playing like they're playing, maybe they can. But I don't think anyone's really expecting it or predicting it.
I think also, Drew, with the Bruins, I mean, you outshoot them 31-20.
Yeah.
You control the puck basically every period. But especially in the second period, they really controlled the play. You have to get more traffic in front.
Well, you know, that's what I wanted to mention. What I noticed about Carey Price in this game, first of all, he's playing with the utmost of confidence. He's playing, nothing's going to get past me. But there were no rebounds. Every shot was gobbled up. That's where Boston's going to That's where Boston's going to score their goals. Jam plays in front of the net. Use their size, and that's where they're going to. Their size and strength. That's where they're going to have a big advantage.
I still think Boston wins this series, Drew.
Yeah,
obviously, no, it's one game's not going to change my opinion of that. Maybe even two games, but this is the thing. When we spoke about all the if there are concerns, Boston, a bunch of guys with 60 points.
Yeah,
not the 90 point guy, not the St. Louis and Stamkos. What if they all go cold at the same time? Right. You know, you watch Brad Marchand, always been a guy with great speed, not great hands, but he can create for himself over the course of the season. He gets goals. He had a puck on the side of the net.
Should have scored in the first period,
I believe it was.
Yeah,
had to score. You have to score that goal in the playoffs.
That's right.
Missed it, and not the greatest hands player.
And I realize,
he led their team in shots.
And Richie, obviously this guy's career may potentially be over, but who's that guy, obviously, that you want there? It's Mark Savard, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's the guy that they're missing. They miss him a lot.
What I noticed about Price...
But we also talk about one other thing before you talk about... Last year, and we talked about it on the previous show, Thomas Plekanec was matched up against Crosby and Ovechkin's line.
Yeah.
Backstrom's line in the first two series.
Yeah.
Montreal against Pittsburgh. And he didn't contribute much on offense if you look at his stats. I don't recall exactly what he had.
Because he was trying to lock down.
People talk about, he didn't produce offensively because he was locked down. Who did he match up against in the first game? David Krejci. What did David Krejci do?
Nothing. Krejci was relatively
David
invisible.
Krejci. How many shots on net did David Krejci have, guys?
I don't know. He had zero shots on net. Well, that's a testament
to... And he's a pass first, don't get me wrong. But zero shots on net.
That's a testament to Thomas Plekanec's skill at shutting down.
And can he? I mean, if he did a pretty good job of shutting down the Backstrom, Ovechkin line and the Crosby line last year, this line is not what those lines were.
No.
So
if he can shut down Crosby and Ovechkin, he can definitely shut down David Krejci, et cetera.
Well, see, that to me is one of the key battles in this series.
You know who I thought played great for Montreal in game one? And, a late season acquisition, James Wisniewski.
Yeah, he logged significant power play time, as he should. Jacques Martin does a good job, guys.
Putting his players in their strengths.
That's right.
And that's what a coach is supposed to do.
And that's what Vigneault does really well in Vancouver. Yeah. Martin does that really well. How many minutes did... I like doing this because it gives you context. Wisniewski played 5 minutes on the power play, not on shorthanded, essentially, 4 seconds. And he played 22 minutes total. So, a quarter of his time is being played on the power
play. I thought he was just a calming influence in the back.
Very good with the puck.
Very good with the puck.
And physical, too.
Oh, yeah.
Physical and big.
Yeah.
I think they like him. I think they might resign him.
I thought when he had the puck in the Montreal zone, the right play was being made by him to get the puck out of their zone.
Drew, I think you touched on something really good, though. Boston's big line of Krejci, Horton, and Lucic is a power line.
Yeah.
And I think that Montreal is going to be able to easily shut down that line because they've got the matchup they want against them. And I think because of that, it's not going to open up the other lines. I think if that line, I know this is, maybe pretty simple that you could say, well, if the top line doesn't go, but for instance, a Philly, they have more solid top lines, even Washington. I think that Boston's forward lines aren't looking as good as they were in the regular season now, that Montreal's able to shut down that big line.
Nathan, I mean, it's depth, though, Izzy. I mean, if you can put up, if you're going to put Krejci up against, Plekanec against Krejci, Bergeron's line's got to kill you.
Well, that's just right. They have to rely on your secondary scoring.
I still think that, Drew, you're going to control the puck like that. I mean, I still think Boston comes out tonight. But you know what? Also, Drew, the key, you need to talk about it, it's very simple. In the NHL, if you look at the stats, Boston's got the lead.
Yeah. Well, you have to get after a guy like Carey Price. Carey Price is got the utmost of confidence right now. If they don't get after him, they don't score a goal early in this
confidence
game tonight.
His confidence grows, and
he feels invincible.
I agree with that.
And he controlled the puck. There was not a rebound to be found. Shot save. When there's no rebound, and when you're playing at that high level as a goaltender, you feel you're going to stop everything that you can get your hands on.
Well, what happened last year?
Well, they ran the hot goalie. Halleck did the same thing.
What do you think the strat?
But Carey Price is better than Halleck.
I agree. And at least as good. And what was their strategy last year? The goalie's different. The strategy hasn't changed.
No, nor should it. Because, the players are more or less the same. You got the same sort of team. You got the same small forwards that aren't going to,
It's funny how Jacques Martin, he had all those Ottawa teams and weren't able to get it done.
Yeah.
Who was their biggest hole?
Goaltending.
And what's the biggest strength of this team and lacking the other areas?
Scoring, size, and goaltending.
It's ironic that way.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, he is a good coach, and he plays to his team's strength, and he puts his team in the best possible position to win.
That's right.
And that's a hallmark of a top-flight coach.
Nice to see Bob Gainey there, by the way. You see Bob Gainey, he was watching the game from the press box.
They have to have,
But I'm just like, a class act, and never a bat, and always good to see him around. Always.
If you're the Montreal Canadiens, And by the way, out every one of your Hall of Fame stars
including Vincent Damfus, Drew?
Well, Vincent Damfus has got some problems on his hands.
Well, literally.
Pardon me, the pun there. He was arrested for...
there was more than one occasion.
I mean, over a two-year period.
He hasn't been convicted.
No, he was allegedly assaulting a spousal abuse over the two-year period.
Anyways.
Good to hear he's doing great.
That's not something we make light of.
Of course.
Not funny. Obviously, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah. No, you know what? Again. You made a reference.
Your Windows browser's open.
You made a reference to it, but of course, he hasn't been convicted yet, but that's not something that you want to be charged with. Anyways, as an aside.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting also, and it was talked about on one of the hockey broadcasts before, you know, Cam Neely and Chiarelli look awfully, I mean, you're into the game.
Yeah.
Awfully, awfully desperate for that game one.
Tight.
I mean,
they look tight.
If you're adding a guy like Cabrera again, didn't like the trade, you know, at a macro level, you think you have a long run in you. I know every game matters, but let's just be a little more calm.
I think it was either Chiarelli or Julian who said, if we don't win two series, this year is a failure. That's a lot of pressure.
Montreal in six.
You know, the predictions are whatever, but you know, they did look tight. And depending on what happens tonight, if they don't get after Price early, the noose is only going to get tighter.
I'm just happy that we're an hour into the show now. Richie's starting to get a little bit less angry at me, but we'll see what happens throughout the show.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Bob Duff from the Windsor Star is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
And now, breaking news.
Breaking news here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's just being reported by various sources that Zdeno Chara, captain of the Boston Bruins, key to that defense, has been hospitalized overnight with dehydration, putting his Game 2 status definitely into doubt. As soon as we have any more news about his Game 2 status, we will certainly bring that to you throughout the next 2 hours here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Again, Zdeno Chara, defenseman for the Boston Bruins, hospitalized overnight with a case of dehydration. Don't know how serious it is yet or what his status is for Game 2, but we will update you on that.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Live from Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan, from the Windsor Star, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Bob Duff. Bob, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
How are you guys doing today?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Real sort of a weird game time there in Detroit with the 1 o'clock Eastern start today.
Yeah, in the playoffs, you're kind of always the prisoner of what the networks want, and the networks wanted the Wings at 1 o'clock, so I guess that's the drawback to being one of the most popular teams in the NHL, that TV always wants you in their schedule.
It's certainly not as big of a problem for Detroit as it is for Phoenix, given that it's an 11 a.m. start time.
10 a.m.
That's 10. Right, 10 a.m. start time on there, if they're still in the sort of the Pacific time zone there.
Yeah.
Yeah, both teams were actually talking about it yesterday, how weird it is, and just it throws off your whole body schedule. You know, you're trying to figure out when to eat, what to eat, the usual pregame meal of pasta, and that doesn't really sit too well if you eat it at 7 in the morning, I don't think. So the players were really having a tough time deciding what route they were going to go for nutrition.
Yeah, I usually eat pasta at 7 in the morning, but I'm hardly a high-tuned athlete, but your point's well taken. Bob, let's get into the series, and let's start with, can you provide us with an injury update on Henrik Zetterberg and any insight into what actually may be ailing him?
Well, I talked to a source within the team the other day, and I was told that it is a sprain, and it would be highly unlikely that we see him before game 5 or 6. And I would suspect, unless the Wings get themselves in trouble in this series, I wouldn't think we'll see him at all, because they're going to give him every chance to heal that they can.
Well, I've been covering the Wings for the Windsor Star. You wrote about how the Wings really bumbled through that first period of game 1. And then, you know, for the rest of the game, everyone would probably agree that they dominated. What adjustments did the team, and maybe specifically Mike Babcock, make between the first and second periods?
I think it was simply they stayed out of the penalty box. I mean, they took 4 foolish penalties in the first period, and were very fortunate that, A, their penalty killers did a fantastic job, and Jimmy Howard made a couple of big stops during the shorthanded situations, or they could have really found themselves behind the eight ball. As you probably know, the NHL issued an advisory to all teams about they were going to crack down on stick fouls on the hand, and the Wings apparently took a while to read that memo because they committed 3 of them in the first period of the game.
Bob, look at, you know, Pavel Datsyuk dominating first game, you know, always just a tremendous player. How much do you think Phoenix, you know, in terms of matching up against Datsyuk, how much do you think they missed Vinek Mihalik from last year's team?
I think their defense is a lot weaker than it was last year. They certainly, Mihalik and Jovanovski were an outstanding pair for them last year, and I just don't think Jovanovski and Akoin are on that same level, and especially with the injuries that Jovanovski's had to battle this year, I don't know how close he is to 100%. I think that's a big factor in this series. I just think on the back end, Phoenix isn't as deep as they were a year ago.
We're joined on the line by Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. Bob, really watching that first period, what I noticed is that the first period of the first game is that Jimmy Howard really kept the Red Wings in it. He made this, he gave up that one goal, but it easily could have been, 2 or 3 nothing for the Coyotes after that first period. How confident is the organization in Jimmy Howard's ability to lead them on, to lead them deep into the playoffs?
I think they're very confident, and certainly, as you say, made some huge saves in that game. I think it's tradition in Red Wing town to be a little concerned about the goaltending. That's been going on, it seems like, since Terry Sawchuk left town. And I think there was, obviously last year he was a rookie, his first playoffs, but I think this year he's more mature. You can see he's much more relaxed this year. He's joking, laughing. Even on the morning of the game, he was cracking jokes and laughing and being his usual self. I just think last year was kind of getting his feet wet, and this year he feels like a playoff-hardened veteran.
Richie asked you about Zibanejad Mihalik, and another guy that, is, in our opinion, really, a guy that they could really use is Derek Morris. How badly did the Coyotes miss Morris in addition to Mihalik?
Well, you certainly saw it on the power play in the first period. Morris is a key to that power play with his shot, and not having him out there, they're a much weaker unit. And it certainly, when you take away a presence from the point, it makes the job for the penalty killers a lot easier.
Are we going to see, Bob, are we going to see Mike Modano in this series?
I don't think so if the Wings keep winning. He's really struggled since he came back from that serious tendon injury, and he just seems to not be there yet. It's almost like he's going through his second training camp, and I wouldn't suspect, unless there's an injury or they get behind in the series and Mike Babcock feels the need to shake things up, I'd be surprised if we see Mike Modano.
Bob, very interesting dynamic, of course, with the Phoenix Coyotes, all the discussion around their future in Phoenix. Sort of a two-part question here. One, are the Red Wings expecting a sort of almost a home crowd in Phoenix for games 3 and 4? And then second of all, have you heard anything? Do you think the players are distracted at all, or are they really being able to shut out the conversation about their future?
Well, the players that I've talked to on the team say they've been dealing with this for so long now, it's almost like an ongoing joke, and it really doesn't bother them that much. I know Dave Tippett was a bit perturbed about that report that emerged a few hours before Game 1 that it was a definite deal that they were going to Winnipeg. I talked to a couple people I've known in the Phoenix organization for a long time, and they both told me, yeah, we know time's running out, but there is no done deal yet. But they're not saying they're never going to go to Winnipeg, but they're saying that nothing has been done yet.
Bob, an interesting dynamic in terms of the Wings' defense, and you look at the kind of the way the ice time was allotted in the first period. Is it odd for you? I mean, you've been following this team for some time now. Is it weird for you to see Nicklas Lidström play below 20 minutes in a playoff game?
Well, I think, again, that was the penalty killing that factored in. They like to use Stewart and Cronwall a lot on the penalty kill, and those two guys logged a lot of ice time in the first period killing penalties, and I think that's where you saw the little discrepancy. And I think also once they got ahead 4-1, they saw an opportunity to cut back a bit on Lidström's minutes, because if it is a long series, you're going to want to play him a lot more toward the end.
Bob, Game 2 gets underway in a couple hours' time. What are you expecting to see? What should the viewers look for in this game in terms of getting off to a quick start, or really how Phoenix is going to answer back?
Well, I think Phoenix's key is their defensive game. They've got to hold the Red Wings to 3 goals or less. Phoenix just doesn't have the potency in their attack to get into a game where they need 4 or 5 goals. They have to win 3-2, 2-1, so they're going to have to tighten up defensively. Brizgalov jokingly suggested his game plan was he was going to stop all the pucks in Game 2, and that's how they're going to win, and he may have to do that to get them a win.
Bob, what is Mike Babcock going to change as far as strategy goes for Game 2?
Pardon me, I kind of lost you there.
Oh, sorry. Well, I said, what is Mike Babcock going to change as far as strategy goes for Game 2?
I think his biggest concern is that they play more discipline and stay out of the penalty box. He was pretty happy with the rest of their game. He said, other than the first period, and he thought most of that had to do with the penalty killing, and that just throws everything off. It throws your line combinations off. It's hard to get any momentum going when you're always on your heels killing penalties.
Moving forward, Bob, and we're not going to assume that people pick the Red Wings to win this series, and we're going to have you on in the next little bit. So we'll ask you, in terms of if the Red Wings were to jump to the next round, and in terms of matchups, it seems probably likely that they'd play a team like San Jose. hypothetically,
I think they'd have a tough time with San Jose because San Jose's got big physical forwards, and the wings' defense seems to really have difficulty with teams that can put a big physical presence front. And I think San Jose was a bad matchup for them last year, and I think it would be a bad matchup for them again this year.
Yeah, so this is what I was getting to. It seemed like last year that exact point that seemed to be the problem, and really the rosters haven't changed much of anything. You know, San Jose has gotten younger and bigger and a little bit better. So it's
I think that certainly the Wings would like to see an upset so they could avoid San Jose, but I don't see that happening. I think Vancouver takes out Chicago, and I think San Jose takes out L.A., and the Wings are looking at the Sharks again if they come through this series.
I agree, and just let you go on this question, Bob. You're with the team and talk to the sources you talk to. How do the Wings view, just as a whole, how do the Wings view the Canucks this year? Do they view them as a team that is the dominant squad in the NHL? Do they view them as a little bit vulnerable?
The Wings are, one thing about them is they never let their cards be seen. Whatever they really think about the Canucks, they don't tell you, but they certainly respect them. Vancouver's given them problems in the past, even when they've, you know, obviously the 2002 series when Vancouver had them down 2-0 quickly. And I think that the Wings know that's going to be a tough series if it gets to that. They have a lot of respect for Vancouver, and I think they're similar to San Jose. They've got some guys that can really give you trouble up front.
Bob Duff of the Windsor Star, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy Game 2 getting underway in just a couple hours' time.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Take care, Bob. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay series.
That one yesterday was quite a change from Game 1.
Well, that's just it. Sort of a tale of two games there. So
more in line with what I thought would happen.
There you go. Well, let's go to break. When we come back, Pittsburgh-Tampa Bay, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We were just joined by Bob Duff from the Windsor Star. In case you miss any interviews or any of the program, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes and get the program sent directly to your iPod as soon as it's posted. Of course, you can also follow us and should follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
The Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Moving on in our preview and review of each and every NHL playoff series, it's Pittsburgh-Tampa. Game 1, dominated by the Pittsburgh Penguins. Game 2, dominated by the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Dominated by the Pittsburgh Penguins game 1? A 0-0 game through the third period.
Okay,
an even game.
Drew likes the word dominate.
I do like the word dominate. But fine, Pittsburgh-Tampa. Pittsburgh wins game 1. Tampa dominates game 2. We said it from the, I mean, when we...
Drew, you're dominating the conversation right now.
When we did our preview last Monday, we said this is a series that's almost too close to call. This is the one series that there was really no consensus that we could come to in terms of, you know, who's the better team here. Well, actually, I'm completely wrong.
We
all picked Tampa, but it took 7 games, as most of us predicted. You said Tampa in 6. So when you got a 7-game series, it can go any way in that 7th game, obviously. You know, after 2 games in this series, what have you seen that, jumps out at you?
I see a lot of mixing and matching by the coaches. I see a lot of game playing, and I like it. I find the coaches to be creative, which I thought would be a factor. It's interesting to note that the Penguins' best penalty kill and the Tampa top power play, Tampa won that battle yesterday. And that's one of the key battles in the series. Can the Pittsburgh penalty kill continue to be as good as it was all year, especially without Matt Cook? And Tampa's power play, can they rein that in? Yesterday they couldn't. And Tampa's power play is very dangerous from a lot of angles. And if LeCavalier is going, guys, and we thought he'd be the key to the series, I thought he'd be the key to the series, at least. If LeCavalier is going, now, it changes a bit because what Guy Boucher has done is he's taken the Stamkos Downey St. Louis line, and he's broken it up. And so you're seeing mixing and matching. Yesterday's game started with LeCavalier between Malone and St. Louis. So how do you match up defensive pairings? Granted, Pittsburgh has 2 really good defensive pairings, but how do you match them up when the lines are going everywhere? And Stamkos is on one line, and LeCavalier is on one line, and St. Louis is on one line. If you can get a matchup of those guys up against Englund and Lovejoy, You're laughing.
And then on that first goal, it was either the first Tampa goal or the second Tampa goal, we saw Le Cavalier, St. Louis, and Gagné connect. So you're right. We talked a lot about this, about how, if this series comes down to, close games, low-scoring games, which most of these games are going to.
Pittsburgh needs. That's what Pittsburgh needs.
The two lines are going to have to score for Tampa, because Pittsburgh is so good defensively, mm-hmm. that you're not Mahalik and Orpik. They're going to shut down. They're going to shut down that top line. But you're right. When now that Boucher has mixed up those lines, we saw five goals as opposed to zero. We saw zero goals in the first game from Tampa, and then in the second game, we saw all three lines contribute. You had Nate Thompson scoring goals.
When you're Pittsburgh, though, and you get down 1-0 after Brewer's goal,
yeah.
Again, we talk about playing with the lead, but especially teams that can't score.
That's just it. I mean, you have to expose Pittsburgh's lack of scoring, and they're not going to be able to get into a shootout with any team. They're going to have to win games, 1-0, 2-1 at best. They're not going to score more than two goals in a game and expect to win. I mean, they're just not. They don't have the Crosby and Malkin. You don't have Crosby and Malkin. It's just,
And somebody will point, people will point to, Pittsburgh outshot them 36-21.
Yeah, well.
Pittsburgh was down 3-0 after the first period, right?
That's right. Tampa Bay doesn't, Pittsburgh's going to shoot from everywhere and everything else.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay changes their strategy accordingly.
Right.
That's all. I mean, it's not that.
Drew, you can get in, you watch, and Mike Colgan, who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, had a great article about Pittsburgh's strategy in terms of getting the puck in deep, chipping it up in deep, versus holding at the line against the 1-3-1. 1-3-1, just to explain to our listeners, is what Tampa generally plays. It means one guy, is kind of forechecking. Three guys are standing, alongside each other, and then one guy is hanging back. And what Tampa, there's a chess game going, and it's Pittsburgh's dumping the puck in deep and then pressuring the defenseman, and Tampa was dropping their last guy back, 1-3-1, the last one guy, the last defenseman, back farther so he could retrieve the pass and get it out of the zone right away. And there's just a chess match that's going there. But in watching the game yesterday and watching the chess match and watching, the strategy and Tampa sometimes dropping four guys into the middle, so essentially, making Pittsburgh carry it or dump it in and, making some good strategic moves there by Tampa. What I notice is, even if Pittsburgh does gain the zone, and even if they do create opportunities, and they had a mini two-on-one early, there's nobody in that team who has the puck who you think, okay,
this guy's going to make the right play, he's going to make the dominating play.
He's dangerous.
That's right. Tampa Bay's got to be... It's a good matchup for Tampa.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
It's a good matchup for Tampa because their defense, which would be the weak link on their team, isn't going to be exposed by anybody there. There's nobody that's going to expose them.
And I wrote the series, and I'm not bringing the plug, but you're going to make the joke. But I wrote the series preview. This is a series I drew in terms of the Hockey Prospectus preview. And I wrote that the key was, there's many keys, but you look at the matchups, look by the numbers, Pittsburgh's offense against Tampa's defense and Tampa's goaltending. Well, Tampa's goaltending is taken as a whole, as the year. But Dwayne Orlson is completely and totally short up that flaw.
Sure.
And then Pittsburgh's offense is great. But then take out Cook for the series. Not really offensively, but take out Cook for the series.
Yeah.
Still, a little bit.
That's
and
right.
Crosby and Malkin. And the advantage that looks huge on paper isn't really an advantage at all.
And I think the main thing with those two
their
guys...
Their offense is probably one of the worst offenses in the league right now.
Drew, without Crosby and Malkin, Tampa Bay wants to score. They want to get the lead, and they want to finish the game in the first period, just like they did. Game, if they put it this way, Drew, they want to do that three more times in the series. They'll be happy winning 5-1.
Well,
every game.
I think
who wouldn't be?
Who wouldn't be exactly? I can excuse their first period. Their first game, they were probably a little tight. It's your first game in the playoffs in a while.
For coach too.
Yeah, for the coach too, especially. I think then once they settle and they relax and they sort of see how the game's going to go and they realize it's still hockey no matter how you cut it, then they're going to be, they'll be fine.
How fitting does it? How good of a move how good does Steve Yzerman look right now? Eric Brewer,
the goal.
You want to see his line last
night? We talked about his defense, Richie. What about his goal?
That wrist shot was a beauty. Top corner. Top cheese left in the glove side. He had a goal.
Did you just say top cheese?
That's what they say.
I know. Since when do you say it?
I can't say it.
If you're a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, you can say stuff like that.
But he's not.
He will soon be.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Kevin Allen was asking him if he was voting this year, so obviously Kevin Allen is waiting.
Eric Brewer, a goal, two assists. More importantly, you'll look at the plus two. Plus minus the flaw side, but that looks good in terms of even strength. Look at his minutes. 17.5 even strength minutes, 2.5 on the power play, 4.5 on the penalty kill. He played 25 minutes, guys. Nobody on the team played over 20 except for Victor Hedman. So that's an addition that, Eric Brewer still skates great. Again, not a great offensive player. The 3 points is a bit of an aberration there, but he looked calm. He gets the first goal. He can play on the ice. He played the long stick. Very good addition. He's looked, you know, he looked very good yesterday. He looked in control yesterday. Looks like Brett Clark is not going to be injured. He took a puck off the face. He looks like he's going
to
be okay.
No. If you take a puck off the face in the playoffs, you have to come. You have to come back out, even if you're still eating the puck.
The Tampa Bay looked in control. They didn't panic. Obviously, an early goal helps, but Pittsburgh is going to need to get the lead in games, and it's. I mean, maybe people seem to be picking Pittsburgh more than Tampa, actually, as far as I could tell, but I just don't see it. I could be wrong.
I don't know why that would be. In Tampa, now Tampa Bay's got the home ice now, Richie. They've switched it up.
Yep.
So it's going. I mean, you know the old adage is always game three is the most important game. I think, you know, that's definitely a cliche, but in this series, if Tampa Bay goes up 2-1, How's Pittsburgh gonna make that up without home ice advantage?
Another thing I talked about was the fact that as much as, you know, Pittsburgh's penalty kill is great, playing against a good Tampa power play, Pittsburgh takes a lot of penalties.
Yeah,
they take a ton of minor penalties. Your penalty kill can be great. I wrote about this in the article. Your penalty kill can be great, but if you take a lot of minor penalties, percentages are going to catch up to you.
Of course. Especially when the offense that you're playing against on the power play.
For example,
if
you're
good as Tampa.
Just hypothetical, if you're killing 80% of your penalties, you still take 10.
Yeah.
You're gonna let in 2 goals. If you have a great penalty kill, stay out of the box. Stay out of the box. Look at the Pittsburgh penalties yesterday. Slashing, boarding, high sticking. That's 3 minors in the first period, 2 minors in the second period, and a minor in the third period. So you're gonna take 6 penalties and try and beat Tampa?
You're not gonna do it successfully.
And 2 minutes, you know, and in simple terms, every penalty you take is essentially 2. I know Tampa allowed a lot of shorthanded goals, and Pittsburgh can score shorthanded goals, but 2 minutes, you know, that's 12 minutes right there where you can't create any offense, and you can hardly create any offense anyways.
You know, you look at we said it multiple times, everything about the playoffs is matchups. And, you know, I said Pittsburgh in 7. Ezzy said Pittsburgh in 7. Rima said Pittsburgh in 7.
No. Tampa
in 7.
Tampa.
You said Tampa in 6.
Mm-hmm. Drew, you're watching Pittsburgh Pirates or something now. I don't know what you're...
Remus is watching the baseball highlights. I just don't see how Pittsburgh... Where does Pittsburgh have an advantage over Tampa? Besides on their...
In goal and on defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
and they got to keep those games low. But Drew,
the discrepancy, the disparity in offensive skill here is so great that
I think
defensive advantage is going to be neutralized.
You can't ignore, like, I mean people wanted and we did too. We said Pittsburgh played the entire second half without Malkin, without Crosby, and they did well. They almost won the division.
Yeah,
but now you're playing a team that's got LeCavalier, St. Louis.
Yep.
Stamkos.
Gagne look good.
Gagne. Purcell looks good.
Malone.
I mean, so now, yeah, you've got a very good, talented defense, but those guys are dominating now with the puck. They're possessing the puck. They're in your zone. Now you're forced to take penalties. So now Pittsburgh, they can't open up their game.
Is there another guy, by the way? Can I go? Yeah. And Ezzy, is there another guy you want on your team right now than a warrior like Martin St. Louis?
He was very fired up yesterday. And did you see the interview afterwards?
Root canals before the game.
St. Louis' interview, and I thought
a bit of it. What did they say?
It's funny because all those Tampa guys shaved all of their heads for cancer research, right? And so LeCavalier and St. Louis, they're focused. Right. Like, I mean, they've been out of the playoffs for 2 years. Is it 2 years or 3 years?
Three.
These guys want to go. Like these guys are all. They've all been there. These guys have all been in the Olympics. They've won a cup. Rolison's a veteran. The defense is, you know, there's Kubina. Aside from Kubina, their defense is not exactly an experienced group.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they want to win the series and go farther. I don't think they're going to do it. I think when they run into other teams, they're going to have problems. But I think they want to go far. That's the goal.
Well, isn't that always the goal?
Yeah, I think it's a realistic goal. I don't think it's realistic for Montreal to without their top defenseman. But I think for Tampa, it's more a little bit more realistic. But it should always be the goal, Drew.
Getting ahead of ourselves, if they do win the series, it depends on matchups, too. I mean, I don't think Tampa doesn't have a chance against any team. I think they have a chance against every team. That's how talented they are. But they're a year or two away from Steve Eiserman's master plan. So I
agree.
Don't think he's disappointed if they lose.
That's right. Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, Vancouver, Chicago. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.